this is the Angry GM, and it's time for another proofread aloud, and the final proofread aloud of February, which is, of course, coming the day before February ends, so that I can post the article the day February ends, and thus technically get all of my articles out on time for the month. Yeah, it's been one of those months. Anyway, this article, or this proofread aloud, will not be followed by a supplemental Q&A because I am behind schedule, but they will resume with the next one because after this I am back on schedule. So anyway, let's proofread aloud The Tao of the Dice. This here is a part of my year-long course in true game mastery. You don't have to read the lessons in order, but that's how they work best. So if you're new here, check out this series index and start at the beginning. Okay, and then we go into the article itself. Ever heard of a breather level? I forgot the word A, or the part, the preposition? No. Article. Ever heard of a breather level? It's a segment of a video game. There's something wrong with the link there too, huh? Okay. Okay, let's try that again. Ever heard of a breather level? It's a segment of a video game that's easier than the parts that come before and after it. It's an important pacing tool because while challenge and tension must trend upward over time, they can't actually rise continuously without frustrating or fatiguing players. I've been laying a lot of new habits on you lately. Basically, I've forced you to change your game running technique on a pretty fundamental level. That ain't easy. And soon, I'll be demanding you rethink everything you know about encounters. So today, I'm giving you a break. No new habits and no assigned homework. I just want to plant some ideas in your noggin. So relax, take a break, and break out your dice. You've earned it. Just be ready to work twice as hard next time. Dice. You gotta know when to roll them. Like it or not, dice are a thing. They're an inalienable part of tabletop role-playing games. Past dalliances with diceless games and the occasional modern offering have all failed. And not without reason. Dice, and the randomness they bring, are an essential part of the tabletop role-playing gameplay and narrative experience. But no matter what the rules tell you or what your players whine at you, it's on you, the true game master, to decide when to turn to the dice to determine what happens next. It's your game and your call. And despite what rule books and sexy gaming geniuses like me suggest, no set of rules or guidelines or checkboxes can tell you when you should and shouldn't break out the dice. Any guidelines you've seen, any at all, are just approximations designed to keep game amateurs and mere game executors from ruining their games through extreme over and under reliance on dice. They need those approximations. You don't. Not anymore. What you need is good judgment, and more importantly, a good intuitive gut. That's the only right way for a true game master to decide whether to consult the plastic polyhedrals for an answer. But you can't make intuitive gut calls if you don't have an intuitive understanding of what your gut is calling, sloshing around in your brain somewhere. So, true game masters must get dice. They've got to understand what dice are and what they do, and what dice aren't, and what they don't. Dice, what are they good for? That should be a question mark. Dice, what are they good for? Dice do one thing and one thing only. They randomize outcomes. Das ist alles. And true game masters don't expect them to do anything else. Anything else true game masters do with dice is purely because they like dice. And who doesn't? Dice are fun. Randomized outcomes are good for tabletop role-playing games. Really, really good. They're good for the mechanical gameplay, they're good for the narrative experience, and they're good for the feel of play. Randomness in mechanical gameplay. I've noted several times that three elements make a game a game. Games have goals, they have challenges, and they have rules. But that's kind of like saying bread has flour, yeast, and water. It's technically true, but it's an incomplete truth. Mark Rosewater, head designer of Magic the Gathering, once listed the 10 elements at the heart of good game design in his article, 10 Things Every Game Needs. And randomized outcomes, spat out by dice, help provide two of those 10 things. First, random outcomes provide surprise. The result of the player's actions must be at least somewhat unpredictable. To the players. GMs don't need surprise. They're not players. Some GMs like to be surprised, but some GMs like chocolate cake, and neither is a vital part of the GMing experience. Second, randomized outcomes comprise a catch-up mechanic. That is, they provide a means by which losers can turn things in their favor. In tabletop role-playing games, players are always favored to win. If there was no way the underdogs could challenge and even beat the favorites once in a while, there'd be no point in playing the game. No one wants to play a game the favorites can never lose. Not even the favorites. But now let's have a sidebar called What Dice Rolls Actually Represent. Every so often, some mere game executor will post an online screed, usually in response to something I've said, about what dice represent in the world. The dice actually represent the quality of the character's effort, or some bullshit like that. In the past, I've been dumb enough to argue with those idiots. I've posted complex, well-thought-out arguments about what the dice do actually represent and what they don't. I've used examples, interviews with game designers, and even cited scientific evidence. And I even adopted a certain quote from Tiamat's Wrath, the eighth book of James S. A. Corey's sci-fi masterpiece, The Expanse series, which perfectly captured the essence of what dice represent. But the real, true, correct answer is this. Dice represent nothing. They are random number generators true game masters use to choose between outcomes whose probabilities are weighted by in-world conditions. If you can't handle that answer, if you absolutely must explain dice in the context of the game's world, you can't run games. And you sure as hell don't deserve any other answer. Randomness and the narrative experience. I know I talk a lot about story structure and cause and effect, so it's probably weird to hear me say randomness has a place in the narrative experience. But randomness plays two important roles in the specific kinds of narrative experiences role-playing games provide. First, recall that pacing is a vital narrative element, and pacing ain't about speed. It's about tension. And tension derives from the audience's uncertainty about the story's outcome. Do you see how randomized outcomes might be important there? Second, and this is a tricky point, randomized outcomes bring a realness to the world and a humanity to the experience. Our world is full of chaos, capital C chaos. Almost everything is beyond our control or even our ability to foresee. We hate that aspect of our lives, but we can't avoid it. Stories help us contextualize our life experiences and let us practice dealing with the uncomfortable parts of those experiences. The stories that do those best, that do both best, are the ones that stick with us, the ones that resonate. The dice, thematically, stand in for chaos, the undeniable elemental force beyond our control that nonetheless rules our lives and screws with our plans daily. And thus, the dice turn our pretend elf game into a resonant human story in a living, breathing world. Sidebar: the weirdness of role-playing game narratives. I bring up the rules and structures that make stories good. Oh, I often bring up the rules and structures that make stories good. They're important. They separate the good stories from the crappy ones. And tabletop role-playing games do yield up stories. But you can't forget that the tabletop role-playing game is a unique storytelling medium. So not all the storytelling rules apply. And some apply very differently. And there are some kinds of stories role-playing games can't tell. Tabletop role-playing games are emergent storytelling media. They can't be wholly planned or plotted. That means the structures are wobbly and more like loose frameworks, cause and effect rules break down occasionally, and sometimes stuff doesn't make sense. In role-playing games, the audience members are also the protagonists of the story. And the story's author, yes, the GM is the author and the players are the audience, and that's how it is. And the story's author lacks control over the protagonists. That changes a lot. True game masters spend a lot of time trying to mold their games' emergent stories into good narratives, but they know they'll never be able to pull it off perfectly. They're okay with that. And they also recognize there are some kinds of narrative experiences they can't capture in a role-playing game. In short, stop trying to emulate heist movies and role-playing games. Heist movies rely heavily on dramatic irony, and dramatic irony is something tabletop role-playing games literally can't do. You can look it up. Randomness and the feel of play. Randomized outcomes in general, and dice as outcome randomizers specifically, actually have a lot of influence over how role-playing games feel. Feel to play, mind you, not to run. Remember, you ain't a player. First, as crazy and paradoxical as this sounds, given my spiel about the chaos, As crazy and paradoxical as this sounds, given my spiel about chaos above, where when players roll dice, when players roll dice, they feel like they're in control of the outcome. Unconsciously. Look, people are stupid. Even you're stupid. I'm less stupid, but I'm still stupid. However well I know intellectually that dice are random number generators, if you let me roll dice, I unconsciously feel like my fate is in my hands. Want proof? Try this at your next game. Print out a few hundred results from a random number generator, hide them behind your screen, and use them in place of dice. When your players complain, explain that what you're doing is no different than rolling dice. See if they come back the following week. Second, as crazy and paradoxical as this sounds, dice feel fair. Dice have no motives, dice have no axes to grind, and dice have no biases. Dice deliver the same random numbers to everyone based purely on objective, impartial probability. You may be the fairest, most kind-hearted GM ever, but if you announce that a PC is dead, your players will piss and moan. Roll a die where they can see it, or better yet, let a player roll it, and they'll concede it was fair. Usually. The dark side of dice. There's some formatting that I have to unbreak. Okay. I'm just fixing some formatting, blah-de-blah, blah-blah, fixing bloop, and we stronger that, okay. The dark side of the dice. Dice are pretty great, huh? Great for games, great for stories, and great for feelings. Let's roll dice for everything. Yay, dice! Well, drop the pom-poms there, Buffy, because it ain't just that simple, because it just ain't that simple. Yeah. Dice are pretty great, huh? Great for games, great for stories, and great for feelings. Let's roll dice for everything. Yay, dice! Well, drop the pom-poms there, Buffy, because it just ain't that simple. True game masters know that die rolls aren't just necessary, they're good. That is why true game masters never brag about running entire sessions without die rolls as some bullshit proof that their game is truly about role-playing and not role-playing. True game masters know a diceless session is a failure. But true game masters are adults, and adults know that everything good, everything, has a cost. They know everything good, everything, has a downside. Let me try that again. But true game masters are adults, and adults know that everything good, everything, has a cost. They know everything good, everything, has a downside. And they know unintended consequences lurk everywhere. But before I explore that idea further, a little sidebar I like to call the false dilemma of role-playing versus role-playing. And I assume you know from context how those two words are being spelled. And if you don't, then you're not ready for my True Game Mastery series, are you? Okay. There's a subset of game masters who think rolling dice is somehow the opposite of role-playing. They're the ones who sneeringly deride role-playing over role-playing. And in so doing, they prove they're mouth-breathing idiots who understand neither one. Role-playing means making choices based on an assumed role and an imaginary situation. Role-playing is making the choices you would make if you really were Ardric the Fighter and your hometown really was under attack by savagely evil orcs. Dice determine the outcomes of uncertain actions in role-playing games. When Ardric's player decides that, if he were Ardric, he'd dive between the marauding orc and the pregnant farm wife, the dice determine whether Ardric deflects the attack with his shield, or whether the best he can do now is avenge the murders of an innocent woman and an unborn human child. The one has nothing to do with the other. Nothing. And if you think real humans don't try to maximize their odds of success in dangerous situations by trying to bring their strength to bear, then you don't just suck at role-playing games, you suck at life. What's wrong with you? The dark side of random gameplay. The best games have an element of surprise and catch-up mechanics, right? So hooray for randomized outcomes, right? Not quite. Unpredictability is good, but too much unpredictability screws with strategy, another vital game element. Players must be able to affect a game's outcome, and the better their decisions, the stronger the impact should be. Too much randomness throws strategic planning out the window. And no, I am not saying the D20 is too swingy. That's a dumbass thing only players say. I would never say that. Catch-up mechanics are good, too. If the winner is certain before the end of the round, or the scene, or the game, there's no tension left, and you might as well just stop playing right then and there. But catch-up mechanics let the underdogs rob the favorites of their earned victories by random chance. It's frustrating to do everything right and have a win stolen away by a few crappy die rolls. And hidden information. That's a heading, by the way. Because you can't see the layout, then it's not obvious that basically, the dark side of random gameplay, ... and hidden information. Apart from confounding strategy and stealing away earned victories, dice can also negatively impact gameplay by revealing information the players shouldn't have and thereby altering their decisions. A character ransacking a room who finds nothing will never know whether there was anything to find. Thus, they have a decision to make. Either keep searching on the assumption they've overlooked something and risk being discovered by a wandering monster, or give up and move on and risk leaving behind a valuable trinket. That's an interesting, meaningful, strategic decision based partly on imperfect information. But if the player knows they rolled a 19 on their search check, they can easily deduce their search was so thorough that it's extremely unlikely they overlooked anything. Or at least that if they searched longer, it's unlikely they'd do any better. The same thing happens when failed rolls provide false information. When players can't see the dice, they're forced to take the results of their character's intuition, interrogation, appraisal, and recall at face value. Players who see the dice can guess whether the GM is lying about what they perceive or remember. The dark side of random narratives. Unpredictable outcomes create tension and humanize the game by introducing an element of chaos, right? Of course they do, or else I wouldn't have said it. But that doesn't mean random outcomes are all beer and Skittles vis-a-vis a role-playing game's narrative. Stories are at their best when they provide satisfying outcomes, and to some extent when they provide comfortable outcomes. Humans like stories that make sense, they like stories that follow the rules of cause and effect, and they like it when characters get what they deserve. Tension and chaos are great, and some stories lean hard into both, but the stories that stay with us are the ones that end well and make sense. Simply put, randomness guarantees neither that a story will make sense, nor that it will end well. Randomness left to its own devices tells sucky stories no one likes. And now a sidebar, which I call the courage of playing D&D. In the 1999 film Dogma, Jason J. Derris surprised his fellow protagonists by accompanying them on an apparently doomed attempt to save the world from a psychotic fallen angel. When challenged, he replied, "I didn't spend all those years playing Dungeons and Dragons without learning a thing or two about courage." It takes courage to run role-playing games. You put yourself in the spotlight and take personal responsibility for everyone's fun. You expose your artistic creations to ridicule, you expose yourself to judgment, and you know that every choice you make can ruin someone's fun or even ruin a friendship. It also takes courage to play role-playing games. You create a character and invest yourself in their adventures, knowing full well that a few bad decisions or some crappy die rolls can destroy them. Courage is a virtue, and it's in short supply these days. All else being equal, people prefer safety to freedom. But true game masters can't play it safe. You can't run your best games if you don't take risks. That's what's at the heart of the doctrine of ownership. Whatever happens, it's on you. True game masters don't tolerate cowards at their table. Players who are not willing to throw themselves into the game, knowing full well they have no control over the outcome, aren't truly invested in the game. It's the risks, costs, and dangers that make the experience meaningful. Courage lies at the heart of every debate over whether GMs should use mind control or whether death should be possible without the player's explicit permission. The dark side of random feelings. Dice are impartial dealers of random numbers based on the immutable laws of probability. All are equal before the dice, right? Well, actually, that is right, and that's the problem. Dice are fair, but they're not just. What's the difference between fair and just? Well, consider the classic example that's often used to decry the poor D20 as too swingy. Ardric, the mighty fighter, tries and fails to break down a door. Then Berylia, the petite elven wizard, steps up and, with a lucky roll, kicks it open. The odds were fair, the dice were impartial, but the outcome was wrong. Ardric invested in building strength. He deserves to break down doors. That's something Ardric should be able to do. And Berylia, the noodle-armed spellslinger who skipped gym every day at Warthog's Wizarding Polytechnic, she should not be able to break down any door Ardric can't. The dice don't give a crap about what's deserved or what should be. Dice just spit out random numbers. And while that's technically fair and egalitarian, it's rarely just. And when it isn't, people get mad at the dice instead of themselves. Sidebar, cognitive dissonance and the poor 20-sider. People's brains are full of deeply held beliefs and convictions, at least when it comes to pretend elf games they are, because that's all I'm talking about here. When something happens to challenge a deeply held belief, it creates something scientists call cognitive dissonance. Basically, that just means there are two mismatched thoughts in the same brain. They can't both be true. And most people don't cope well with that. It's very stressful. Challenging deeply held beliefs creates a sort of existential crisis. So most people respond by trying to rationalize the mismatch or reject the new idea. Dice are fair and impartial, right? Deeply held belief. But Beryllia just broke down a door that Ardric couldn't. That's not right. I can't challenge my belief in the fairness of the dice, so I'll just invent a bullshit claim to explain away the unfair-seeming result. Obviously, the D20 is too swingy. Dot, dot, dot. End game flow. Apart from revealing themselves to be unjust, heartless bastards of fair and object... Apart from revealing themselves as unjust, heartless bastards instead of fair and objective deciders of honest outcomes, dice can also negatively impact the feel of the game by breaking the game's flow. It's like this. Every time you stop the gameplay action to roll dice, you're stopping the gameplay action to roll dice. Considering how hard you've got to work to keep your game running smoothly, and considering that all else being equal, smooth games are good games and herky-jerky games are bad games, that ain't great. In fact, breaking flow is the single worst downside to rolling dice. Of course, some in-game situations can handle the flow break better than others. Combat? It's supposed to ping-pong between narrative mode and mechanics mode. And slow and methodical dungeon exploration can tolerate stops for perception checks and random monster rolls and crap like that. But you can't keep hitting the brakes in a social interaction scene and expect anything like a natural conversation. And if a scene's already flowing well without dice, suddenly injecting a few is like downshifting from third gear to first gear without going through second in between. Whoops. This bulleted list has no bulletins. Okay. Whoops. And that is, yeah. Okay. Making bullets in the bulleted list. Shooting the bulleted list full of bullets. Heading. A dicey summary. I know y'all love my checklists and summations a huggy-buggy bunch, so let me summarize the good and bad that dice have to offer for you in convenient bullet form before I try to tie this shit up with some useful advice. Dice help a GM select between uncertain outcomes. Dice invest gameplay with an element of surprise. Dice facilitate reversals of fortune in gameplay. Dice invest in narrative with tension. Dice humanize and ground the game by thematically representing capital C chaos. Dice give players a sense of control over their fates. Dice lend a game a sense of fairness and objectivity. Dice can sabotage gameplay strategy. Dice can steal earned victories. Dice can reveal information better left hidden. Dice can deliver unsatisfying or unjust outcomes. Dice break the game's flow. What's a GM to do with dice? That fancy bullet list, that's what dice do, and that's all they do. True game masters accept that list as is. They don't pretend the pros aren't pros and the cons aren't cons, and they don't try to ascribe dice any further meaning or purpose. True game masters don't consider realism or simulationism or anything like that. And once true game masters decide to consult the dice, they do so knowing what's at stake, and they accept it. True game masters don't rely on checklists or written rules to tell them when to roll the dice. They understand dice, they trust their judgment, and they own their games, so they're willing to make a call every time and live with the results. Weighing it all. Every time there's an action to resolve, every time you hit the determine part of the declare, determine, describe cycle, you've got to decide whether to ask the dice what they think. And with every action and every moment, the calculus changes. Worse yet, you're equally likely to end up with disinvested players by over-relying as by under-relying on the dice. And even if you make the right call every time, a bad run of dice outcomes can frustrate players and kill their investment. Fortunately, there's an easy default answer. More fortunately, it's not as easy to mess this up as it seems. And best of all, if you do mess this up, it's easy to fix. First, remember that the pros outweigh the cons most of the time. That's why the dice even exist. If you overdice, if you overdice the use a little, you won't bake things. Okay. First, remember that the pros outweigh the cons most of the time. That's why the dice even exist. If you overuse the dice a little, you won't break things. Hell, you're less likely to break your game by overusing the dice than you are by underusing them. Though I know lots of folks will scream otherwise. Second, realize that the middle ground between over-relying and under-relying on the dice is really big. If you're even a little thoughtful and attentive, you won't end up in the over-weeds or the under-weeds. You have a hell of a lot of wiggle room. Third, recognize you can tweak your reliance on the dice just by calling for more or fewer die rolls. It's an easy knob to turn. And it's a knob the players are really sensitive to. That's why you can perk up bored players just by rolling some dice, or cheer up frustrated players by letting their dice cool down. In fact, if your players seem grumpy or disinvested and you're pretty sure your flow is on point, try fiddling with your dice reliance knob. Use dice more liberally if your players are bored, cocky, or murder hobo-y, and use them more conservatively if your players seem frustrated or pessimistic. Some parting advice. I'm not leaving you with a checklist of criteria that'll tell you when to consult the dice and when not to. I'd be doing you a terrible disservice. And if you've got a note card with my four simple rules on it, throw it away. It's time to grow up. That said, here are a few vague bits of advice to read over and then move beyond. Do not write these down and stick them to your screen. Be a true game master. Read my advice, then let it fade into your unconscious, then trust your gut. Never use the dice to resolve something if you're already certain of the outcome. That's not what they're for. Don't let your game go too long without a dice roll. If you find yourself thinking, gosh, it's been a while since we touched some dice, let the dice decide the next remotely uncertain thing. Don't be afraid to roll some checks yourself behind the screen. Do so to keep information hidden or to resolve actions without breaking flow. Make sure you have the information you need to quickly and quietly resolve character actions in secret. I want to add a note here, so just give me a second. In fact, I'm going to pause. All right, let me try that again. Don't be afraid to roll some checks yourself behind the screen. Do so to keep information hidden or to resolve actions without breaking flow. I roll almost all social interaction checks at my table behind the screen myself for just that reason. Almost all, but not absolutely all. And make sure you have the information you need to quickly and quietly resolve character actions in secret. Oops. Don't ask the dice for more than a yes or no. Sorry, narrative dice lovers, you're wrong. Dice exist to randomly select from uncertain outcomes. By the time you touch the dice, you should know all the outcomes that might come out. Consequences, risks, and costs are for you to work out. Your dice should only speak four phrases tops: yes, no, very yes, and very no. Once you decide to consult the dice, stick with the result. Don't veto or fudge outcomes. If you ain't comfortable with what the dice might say, don't roll the dice at all. If you do roll the dice, have the stones to accept the result and force your players to do the same. Finally, don't ask the dice about anything that shouldn't be random. If the strongest character fails to smash down the door or the most alert character fails to find the secret door, don't let the dice, If the strongest character fails to smash down the door or the most alert character fails to find the secret door, don't let the dice say someone can do them better. You and I, and your players, know that if the cleric can't identify the holy symbol, no one else should be able to. Don't let the dice say otherwise. Don't give your players an excuse to spout nonsense about swinginess, lest you start believing that bullshit yourself. And that is the Proofread Aloud. And with that, happy February, and here's looking forward to a much more stable March.